This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I am Glenda Geek from a very wet, drenched Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Megan Alleen from Hood River, Oregon, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 21st, episode 1937. This episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, horse world.
Monday, Monday, can't trust that day.
I didn't know.
Well, it was your fault, so.
Behind our masks, we're perfectly ordinary people.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. Jamie is off. She's still up playing around in, I don't know, Michigan, Alabama. I don't know where she is. She's up there at the bottom of the mountains, sending us gorgeous pictures, one after another, of her riding horses in gorgeous mountains. That's where she is. But she apparently is having a good time. And we have Megan here with us. Megan's one of our terrific auditors and also one of our cruise mates from the Horse Lovers Cruise.
That's right.
Yeah, it seems like 20 years ago, doesn't it?
It does. It's hard to believe that it was only like 2-3 months ago.
I know. It does seem like a long time ago. Well, Megan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for choosing me.
And Joy did a great job on Friday, so no pressure, okay?
Yeah, great. Yeah, I listened to that and was like, oh, awesome. So she's fantastic. So I should be even worse. No big shoes to fill at all.
Hey, I spent 4 or 5 days with you on a cruise. I know you can be fun. So there's not a problem there.
That's true. Completely sober, by the way.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Already ahead of the game.
That's true. It's a little early to start drinking where you are. You're out on the West Coast. You're getting up at Jamie time here.
I am. Luckily, this is the time that I normally get up for work anyways, so it's not like it was a huge deal, but yeah, no, it's a
good 5 a.m. So what'd you tell him at work? I can't come in because I'm doing a radio show?
Kinda. I told my boss, hey, I need a couple hours this morning, and he's like, I don't care. Okay, fine. I'll see you when you get in. He's great. The best boss ever.
And what do you do?
I am the production scheduler for a company that builds drones.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yes.
Do you get to fly
them? Awesome. I wish, but no, they don't let the production scheduler play with the $1 million machines.
Oh, they don't let you fly the $1 million drone?
I don't know why. Like, I should be fine with it. It's like playing a video game. I could probably figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, unfortunately, they don't.
Yeah, it's that wrecking it the first time that's the problem.
Right. Yeah, we did do that once. We had built up this brand new configuration and our customer was out to watch us fly it and we crashed it the very first one. So that's super awesome to do.
All right. Well, coming up for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be on vacation. We're leaving right after. We're taking a boat to the airport. it's just been raining here for the solid month and it's not stopped overnight, that's for sure. And then we're flying to Alaska via Portland. We're going to spend a few days up in Anchorage. We're going to see Lisa Kelly, our friend, the Ice Road Trucker. We're going to spend a day at her house. And then there's an auditor by the name of Emily, who's going to take us on a carriage ride up there in Anchorage. So we're going to spend a few days hiking around and doing things. And then we're catching a cruise, a 7-night cruise on Royal Caribbean from Seward. How do you say that, Jennifer? I don't know.
Seward,
Alaska, Seward. And then Seward. Heading back to Vancouver, or just above you, actually. So we're going to be doing that and taking a couple of weeks off. But in the meantime, there will be new shows here at Horses in the Morning, and the other shows will continue as well. But Horses in the Morning will have new shows. Jemmy has been a godsend in getting this all set up. She is going to be recording the shows with Jamie and fill-in co-hosts. They just will not be live. She'll put them out on the feed. Having her do live required multiple more computers and a lot of hardware and was just not worth it. So she'll be putting them out. You'll see them on your Horses in the Morning feed, wherever you listen. You'll see it there. It's just no live until the first week of June. But you still will get new shows, and I'm sure they'll be out of control and a lot of fun. And I know that some auditors are helping out there, too, with Jamie. So that should be a good time. And Jennifer, what is coming up on today's show?
Coming up on today's Omega Alpha Equine Monday edition, the Thoroughbred Makeover. It's a mere 5 months away. So Jen Reutz is stopping by to tell us about another awesome division being introduced this year. It keeps getting bigger and bigger. And then, speaking of awesome, the Royal Wedding. It provided plenty of equine eye candy this weekend, but it also brought up a lot of questions. So our go-to coachman, David Saunders, also former coachman of the Queen, he's going to stop by and answer all of our questions from the auditor's Facebook page. And one last installment on our list of awesome things today. Happy American Red Cross Founders Day. The Red Cross was founded in 1881 by Clara Barton, who led the organization for the next 23 years. Go out and celebrate with random acts of helpfulness.
There you go. Very good. Thank you, Jennifer. Well, it's Daily Winnie time. And, well, here we go.
Justify load, so set with the call of the 143rd Preakness Stakes. Here's Larry Colmus.
Thank you, Mike. I'm looking at the shot that you are, so we'll see what happens here as Bravazo goes in. They're all in line. We're ready for the start. They're off in the Preakness. Justify appeared to come out cleanly with Good Magic Quip on the inside with Early Speed 2. And Bravazo is close and in the mix as they race out of the fog and bias for the first time. And it is indeed Justify who emerges up top. But Good Magic is closer today. Bravazo is running along in third. Quip is fourth. Diamond King is fifth. Then Sporting Chance, tenfold on the outside. And Lone Sailor's the last of them all as Justify is taken on by Good Magic through a 23.11 opening quarter mile. So Good Magic trying to get the jump on Justify here. They're head in head as they make their way to the backstretch. And Bravazo is running along in third. Quip is fourth toward the inside. Diamond King follows in fifth. Then comes Tenfold, Sporting Chance. And Lone Sailor, the last of them all, as they continue their way up the backstretch. 47.19, a reasonable half mile here in the Preakness Stakes. But a chance. And Lone.
Up.
Uh oh.
What happened?
Continue their way up the backstretch. 47.19, a reasonable half mile here in the Preakness Stakes. But it is, in fact, Good Magic on the inside of Justify, and their noses apart on the lead. So they're going at each other, although the pace is not all that fast. And Bravazo is three lengths off of them. Quip is down toward the inside, Tenfold Diamond King. And then on the inside is Lone Sailor. So they make their way into the turn. Good Magic on the inside of Justify. The two of them are right together, and they've run three quarters of a mile in 1 minute, 11.42 seconds as they round the far turn in the fog at Pimlico. And Good Magic on the inside's got a head in front. Mike Smith goes to a ride on Justify. They are nose to nose. Justify now sticks a neck in front. He's going to try to put away Good Magic. And they're into the stretch. And Mike Smith goes to the whip on Justify. Tenfold is closing in with Bravazo on the outside as the field comes into the final furlong. It is Justify in front. Good Magic on the outside. Tenfold. Bravazo. Justify. He's unstoppable. He won the Preakness. Bravazo was second. Tenfold was third. Good Magic.
Oh, my God. Talk about heart attacks.
It was a nail biter the entire time.
Well, not only that, you couldn't see the horses. That didn't help. I mean, it was.
That actually made it more of a nail biter.
It did. I mean, it was totally fogged in. What a miserable track. Justify has had a rough go in these two races. I mean, the track was, I think it was sloppier than the Kentucky Derby. It was just a mess.
Oh, it was horrible.
Now, it's interesting because he had a lot of horses closing on him right at the end.
He did.
And of course, the Belmont's a longer race, so we're going to see. But then, if it's not raining, who knows? All bets are off because we don't know what's going to happen if it's not raining.
Yeah, but he might not win if it's not raining because evidently he's won when it has been. Yeah, I don't know.
He could be a mutter, but he's undefeated still.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe that mud inspires him to stay in front because he doesn't want to get his pretty face all splashed up, you know?
I can't blame him. That was a mess.
It was really a mess. Yeah. It definitely was. Well, we are going to be anxiously awaiting, of course, the third leg, and that's coming up here. I think it's 4 weeks from now, so we'll be talking a lot about that. But what an incredible race. And it was so funny because they talked to the track announcer who said, basically, I just vamped around that final turn, just like Larry Comas was there. You know, they're into the fog because he couldn't see them. Nobody can see what's going to come out.
Exactly. I'm not sure who's in front, but we'll find out here in a minute.
Well, you know, speaking of thoroughbreds, let's see if she has any thoughts on this particular race. We have Jen with us. Jen is the executive director of the Retired Racehorse Project. So do you watch the races, Jen?
I do, yes. My background is actually in thoroughbred racing, so I was very keen to watch the races for sure.
Oh, Jen, you're fading out on us. Yeah, we can barely hear you.
Uh-oh. How's this? Is this any better?
You know what, Jennifer? I'm going to have you try her back and see if we can get a better line, because I can barely hear her. Jen, we'll call you right back.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, see if you can get a better line there, Jennifer. All right, well, we'll do your daily whinny a while, okay?
Okay. My daily whinny goes out to Cynthia at Dixieland Saddles. I worked with her to get my new saddle that I should be getting tomorrow, hopefully, per the United States Postal Service delivers when they should, and should be able to actually start riding my horse for the first time.
What do you have? What's your horsey?
My horse is an American saddlebred. So first saddlebred and first mare ever. So that's fun.
Are you Western rider, English?
I ride both. This particular saddle will be a Western saddle, but I've been riding her dressage in a dressage saddle up until this point, just because that was the only saddle I had that fit her, sort of. So, but no, I ride, I like to ride a lot, different stuff. I don't necessarily just stick with one discipline. I get too bored. So.
And how old is she?
She will be 10 this year, actually.
Good age.
Yeah.
And how long have you had her?
I got her a year in June last year, so okay. I've only had her for about a year. So,
are you a serious trail rider? You live out in, where trail riding's fun.
Yes, where you can trail ride for hours, literally. I think she was actually sold as a quote unquote endurance prospect. Which just means that she's got a lot of energy, which she does. But she actually loves the trail. She's pretty funny. She'll spook at everything in the arena, but you put her out on a trail, she'll bushwhack through a deer trail with no hesitation at all whatsoever. It's very funny to watch her.
Now, does spirited also mean it's controlled spirited?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So she is a little crazy at times, but she does listen when you're like, hey, can we not, you know, gallop off into the distance? And she's like, oh, okay, sure. But at the same time, she's still scared of, you know, sand hitting the arena door. So that happens.
It's funny how that works.
Good times.
It's funny how that works. And when did you start riding? Were you riding as a kid?
Oh, yeah. I was horse crazy from a very young age, probably about two. I had one of those toys where, you know, it's like the cow says moo. And I would always play it on the horse one. And my mom got tired of it after about a day of just the horse going. So she threw that away. So she knew she was in for a hard time. But yeah, I've been riding since I was 10. So that's fun.
All right, Megan, your guest is ready. Hopefully. Here we go.
All right. Hopefully we can hear Jen a little bit better this time. Jen, good morning.
Hey, I'm sorry about that, but hopefully you can hear me better now.
I definitely can. I don't know.
I think we're good. Yep.
Okay. So tell us about this new team competition thing you got going on this year.
Yeah, it's really exciting. We're always looking for more ways to let people experience the Thoroughbred Makeover and take part in it. And, you know, sometimes it can be intimidating for people to take a horse off the racetrack and retrain it all by themselves. It's a big investment. It's a big time commitment. And it's a big test of your training and riding abilities. And so we wanted to do something to kind of help bridge the gap for people who are maybe worried about taking that plunge themselves. And so we created this team competition where groups of four people, a team captain and at least three members, or it can be more than four people, but it has to be a minimum of four, can collaborate to bring a horse to the makeover. So it's great for groups of friends and riders who all ride at a stable together. They can take on like a farm horse themselves. And it's really good for these college teams. There's so many NCAA and IHSA college teams nowadays that, you know, these kids go to college together, their friends and their personal lives, and their team can take on a horse. And with the advising of their team captain or their coach or their trainer, they can bring that horse along for the makeover and then decide however they want to, who will present that horse in competition. So there could be a team of, a team of like seven people training a horse, and then, you know, however they decide they want to pick the two people who will show it at the Thoroughbred makeover, they can decide as a group who fits the horse best. The team captain can make the executive decision. They can draw names out of a hat, whatever they want to do. That's how they decide. And then two different people have to present the horse at competition. So it really shows the versatility of the horses too.
Awesome. So it doesn't have to be necessarily a college team. Like you said, it could be, you know, if you have a group of gals at the barn who want to get together, they can decide to show horse at the, in the team competition, correct?
Yes. Yeah. It's actually, it's funny. We originally thought about it for college teams. And then once we started putting it together, we realized, you know, it really could be any team, a college team, a barn team. And so the barn where I keep my horses, for example, there's a ton of adult amateurs who, and like me, I'm an adult amateur. And, you know, I have a professional career, but I ride on the side, but I have no aspirations of thinking I'm going to the Olympics or anything. I just ride because it's fun and, you know, not too serious, but it's, you know, great pastime. And so there's a group of adult amateurs at the barn where I ride who are actually getting a horse. They've gotten a horse off of the track and they're bringing it just together with our trainer. Unfortunately, I'm not on the team since I think that would be a conflict of interest, but I'll cheer them on as I will everyone. They'll be bringing a horse together just as a fun kind of deviation from what you do with your own horses every day.
No, yeah, that's it definitely takes the pressure off, like you said, if you're part of a team, so you don't necessarily feel quite so responsible for the whole thing. So is the team, are the team horses judged on the same level as the individual horses?
Yes, it's going to be a separate competition. This year it's just a pilot program. So we're only accepting 20 horses into the team competition just to test it out and see, you know, how popular it is and how it works and how we need to structure it. So there will be 20 teams and they will only be competing in the hunter and jumper divisions, since those are the most common divisions for intercollegiate equestrian sports as far as like thoroughbreds being used or concerned. You know, like a lot of equestrian teams at the college level have a couple thoroughbreds on the track probably, but they're usually used for the English disciplines more so than the Western. So we were just trying to find the way to test out this idea the easiest way possible.
I think they should get an award. If you got four horse girls that can agree on training one horse, that deserves an award right there.
Hey, that's not exactly a bad idea. Maybe you guys just sponsor that award.
If they don't kill each other in the training of this horse, then we can give them an award. You survived.
I know. That's a good way to like learn to collaborate, though, too, because life is all about collaboration. And, you know, if you don't have the time and resources and whatnot to take this on yourself or just the experience, it's a great way to be able to learn a new set of skills training a young horse, but also put your own polish and touch on it, you know?
Well, that is true. And I forgot, what age do you have to be to compete in the Thoroughbred Makeover?
That's a great question. If I remember our rules correctly, I want to say the minimum age is 12, but I'd have
that's
to
what
double
I was
check
thinking
on
it
that.
Was 12 or 14. Yeah. And this would be great for pony clubs, right? To get together.
For sure. Yeah. There's actually some people we've talked with at the U.S. Pony Club, and then there's been some pony clubs around the country who've shown interest as well, because so many of those horses too are off of the track. And a lot of times they have a little bit more experience being off of the track when they're, you know, competing under pony clubbers. But at the same time, these girls are, you know, riding on these spreads and ready for the next challenge. And the pony club does such a good job of, you know, honing really good horsemen in equestrians. So this is a great aspect to add into some of their pony club experiences too. And it's just fun to do something with your horse friends, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So if let's say you're already in the makeover and you want to join a team instead of doing it individual, can you do that with this particular competition this far into it? Or
we will let people transition their current thoroughbred makeover application to a team application if they want to. We've got 15 teams right now, and we've got space for 5 more. There's anyone who has a horse and they want to put it in the team competition instead of the actual makeover, we'll let up to 5 people do that, and then they can put together their team around the horse. And basically the only criteria is that every team member has to be a member of the Retired Racehorse Project, which is nominal and very easy. It's just kind of like an application fee, basically. And then they get all of the benefits of being a member, like the subscription to the magazine and a lot of discounts on merchandise and access to a lot of training information and whatnot. But then they can be a member of this team and have the ability to be one of the people chosen to ride it in the competition. And so our goal is, if this really takes off this year, to expand it next year and have, you know, a nice little pot of prize money for the people competing in this team competition. It's a little bit different to train a horse as a team than to train a horse as an individual. So this year, the team competition horses won't be eligible for the $100,000 plus of prize money that we have for the traditional makeover competitors, but we are putting together a little pot of prize money for them. We're still working on that, but we'll have something for them, and hopefully in future years we can make that a meaningful prize as well, so they can put that toward something at their barn or at their college equestrian team facilities, whatever they want to.
Well, we're speaking with Jen, who is the executive director of the Retired Racehorse Project. Jen, we have been we've been on board with you guys since Stuart started this. I mean, the first one, and covering it each year, yeah. and doing interviews with your competitors and things. And each year, it's been growing and doing more amazing things. So, are there, besides this, are there any other new things, demonstrations, and other things that you're combining this year for the show?
There are, and I really appreciate you asking that, because there are some really...
I would have been shocked if there weren't, to be honest, because you guys are a bit of overachievers over there, so...
No, it's an incredible team over there. You know, I was on the board for about 5 years before Stuart decided to step down as the executive director and asked me to take the reins on that. I really got to see this grow a little bit and evolve into what it is today, and I'm so incredibly impressed by the team over there with Kirsten and Julia and Leah in the office. And we've got Julie and Aaron, who are kind of contract workers who help with sponsorship and publicity and all that. It's just such a good team, and they care so much about that. And so that team is behind some of these new things we're doing this year. One thing that's really kind of taken on a life of its own are all these special awards. It's, you know, for the last few years, it's been the $100,000 thoroughbred makeover. And this year, there's significantly more than $100,000 available in prize money. We should probably put out an announcement once we hit a nice round number, like $125,000 or something. But there's so many different state thoroughbred breed associations or racetracks or aftercare organizations who are putting up additional award money for the top place horse affiliated with their organization. And so the Louisiana Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association actually started this off. They wanted to make a $2,500 prize for the top place Louisiana bred horse in the competition in an effort to get more people thinking about adopting horses out of Louisiana, which I think is a great way for them to get involved in aftercare. And it really helped a few people decide to look for Louisiana breds. And then in turn, that also helped other state breed associations put that money up. So we've got the New York Thoroughbred Breeders Association and the Horsemen's Association in that state combining to put up $5,000 for New York breds or horses that race there. We've got Maryland on board, California. We've got a lot of different states involved in that. And then there's also some aftercare organizations like New Vocations and Cantor who are having special awards and prizes for their top place horses as well. So if someone either has a horse that they are already planning on competing, or if they're even still looking for a horse and they want to see what available money is out there as far as additional prize money, they can go to tbmakeover.org, and on there they can look for special awards, and there's an ever-growing list of special awards. So that's really exciting. Another thing we're working on this year, hopefully, is to do on Sunday. We're always trying to do something fun on Sunday. We're thinking about possibly doing the team competition on Sunday. We haven't decided yet if it's going to be Sunday or earlier in the week. But another thing we'd like to do on Sunday is hopefully have a polo match out there. Everyone who came out from the makeover, whether they're local or they've traveled from far away, can come out and enjoy brunch and a polo match in the morning, hopefully on Sunday. So we're working with the Polo Association to put that together, and I think that would be really neat too.
Very good. Well, you guys are always doing fun stuff. Give the dates again.
This year, the Thoroughbred Makeover is October 4th through 7th, and it's at the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington, Kentucky. It's a great weekend to come out. If you're a Thoroughbred lover, you can visit some of the area horse farms. They're all going to be doing tours. You can go out to Keeneland and either take in the races in the afternoon one day, or you can go out there in the morning and watch the horses work out.
Yeah,
free and open to the public, and you can grab breakfast on the backside. And of course, you can come out and watch 10 different disciplines and Thoroughbreds trying them all out at the Thoroughbred Makeover.
Well, that sounds great. What, and the website one more time.
For the Thoroughbred Makeover itself, we actually had to split the two websites. So the Thoroughbred Makeover event itself, it's tbmakeover.org. And then the Retired Racehorse Project website, which covers everything else that we do, from all of the clinics and demos around the country we do, to the magazine, to all of our training tips and opportunities and advice, and our classified section for horses for sale. All that stuff can be found at retiredracehorseproject.org.
Very good. Well, Jen, thank you so much. Are you going to the AHP conference, by the way?
No, unfortunately, okay. I have a conflict that you can will not.
I won't
there,
see you there. Okay.
So, some of the people behind our magazine and our organization are definitely planning to
all right,
go
well,
there.
I'll say so hi to them.
We will be represented.
Okay, sounds good.
We were lucky enough to have our magazine as a finalist.
Oh, great! Well, I'll be rooting for you. We'll be there.
Yeah.
So, thanks, Jen. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Well, have fun.
All right. Take
thanks,
care.
Jen.
Thanks.
Speaking of Jen, what about Omega Alpha? I know we're using some of their products right now. Oh, and we might not have Jennifer.
I'm right here. You have to give me a little warning when you're going to jump in and ask me a question.
I did. I actually typed you a note, but you didn't see it. So
I didn't see it. Yes, we do. We actually have several bottles of Omega Alpha products in the feed room right now. And it's funny because now as soon as Scooter sees one of the bottles come out and he can hear me shaking it, he's, if you're familiar with Simon the Cat's comics on YouTube, when he's hungry, he points at his mouth and just opens his mouth as wide as he can and says, that's what Scooter does. He opens his mouth as wide as he can and says, But in this particular case, it wasn't for him. It was for Nigel. I've been using the Gastra FX product with Nigel, which is a product designed to help keep their intestinal tract healthy, deal with ulcers and ulcer symptoms, because it's been my mission this month to get Nigel to be more consistently in front of my leg. Not his favorite thing to do. He tends to be balk and spin type of guy. And if he's try to get him out in front of your leg, he just spins. Doesn't like it. And I noticed after about the first 10 days, because the first week you use it daily, after about the first 10 days, he was a little bit less bulky. And now after about a month, he is, I would say, a 75% improvement on when I say you need to be out in front of my leg when he gets bulky about something scary. He just does it. Now, yes, we've been training, but I think that's a significant ingredient that you give it to the horse right before you put the bridle on, so they don't have that excess acid building up in their tummy when you go for a ride. I think that is an ingredient in that his insides just feel better because he does get a little keyed up. So Gastro FX, if you've got horses that are bulky, sulky, might be worth your try. You might have a tummy that is a little upset.
OmegaAlphaEquine.com is where you can find it. All right. Well, the other thing.
And they love it. It's easy to give.
Yeah, they apparently like it, which is weird. For a supplement.
And at least Scooter does, anyways.
Yes. Yeah, Scooter. And Scooter's picky about some things. She tried a.
Nigel hasn't quite got to the point where he opens his mouth and says, ah, but he's getting there.
She tried a different non Omega Alpha supplement, and Scooter would not eat it. I mean, it was a feed through. He just wouldn't eat his feed. He just stopped
he just
eating.
He was like, no. Nope.
And it was a tiny little bit, like less than a teaspoon. And it was, nope, not eating. He didn't like it at all.
Vetoed.
Vetoed. Well, something else that happened over the weekend is a little wedding that went on, and horses got a lot of play in that wedding.
And, just a small, teeny, tiny one.
Yes, and there was a lot of questions about especially the carriage setup and how everything was. So we have our resident expert. Let me see if I can get him on here. We're calling him on Skype, so hopefully he's there. You've heard him on the show before. David, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you sound great. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. This is David Saunders, who was coachman for a long time at the Royal Mews, about 20 years. You've heard him on the show before, and he's always a good guest to have on when we have questions. Well, there was this little wedding over the weekend, David, and I just looked. 23 million Americans got up at 4 a.m. and watched it. So it was well watched. And we did have a lot of questions. And I know that you've done this before a few times.
I did one that I think more than a billion people watched on television worldwide. Of course, we didn't have an American interest with the Prince and Princess of Wales. But when the bridegroom's husband, the bridegroom's mother was married, we had a lot more people, and it was a much bigger deal. There was many more horses on, but it was, of course, it was a state wedding, whereas this really was not a state wedding.
Yeah. And that we're talking about Diana, of course, when
that, exactly. Yep. Yes. Sorry. The Princess of Wales, Lady Diana. Yes.
Well, there was some questions because, anytime this comes up, I know we've had this conversation before, but this one, they actually used a little bit of a different carriage. So if you don't mind, I'm going to go down and ask some listener questions. We have a whole bunch of them here.
Sure.
The first question was, tell us about the carriage used because it didn't have a driver on the box, and it was just a different setup than most people are used to seeing.
Okay, there are two types of carriages. There are coachman-driven carriages. Well, there are more than two types, but mostly the Queen has two types of carriages we use for ceremonials. They are coachman-driven carriages and postillion-driven carriages. Postillion-driven carriages are much older. They were really come from the days when you would own a carriage and say, Glenn, you were going to go from Ocala to Tallahassee. So the postboys, the postillions, would take you there. They would arrive at your house, they would hook onto your carriage, and they would stop and change horses all the way to Tallahassee and all the way back. So you didn't actually have to own horses. you only owned the carriage.
I didn't know that.
So that was the original version of it. So postillion is, but in our royal household, the British royal household, postillion is also a sign of rank. So the Queen is almost always postillioned everywhere. For instance, the other sign of rank you can see that in London we have two forms of ambassadors, as it were. We have ambassadors from non-Commonwealth countries. But if you're a Commonwealth country like Canada, you have what they call a High Commissioner. And because the Queen is head of the Commonwealth, we would send a postillion carriage to pick you up to present your credentials to the Queen. But if you were an ambassador, we would send a driven carriage for you to present your, to pick you up to come to Buckingham Palace to present your credentials to the Queen. Hmm. So a postillion carriage is much more a vehicle of rank. But the other thing as well is that you don't, that the carriage, the view of the carriage is not really disturbed by a coachman sitting on the carriage, because basically, people aren't there to see the staff. They're there to see the talent inside the carriage. And so a postillion carriage is really a much better carriage for showing off the principals, as it were. the Ascot Landors, which were designed especially for one job and one job only, to carry the Queen and her guests from Windsor Castle to Ascot Racecourse, which is in the Windsor Great Park, and the Queen owns it. There were six of them originally. Tell me if I'm going on too much.
No, this is the one that they were in.
Yeah, this is the one they were in. It's an Ascot Landor. There were originally six. Now, I'm probably going to be excommunicated for telling you this, but just after the war, the Crown Equerry at the time was a Brigadier Sale, S-A-L-E, I think. And the motor car was just coming out, and he thought, well, we're not going to need carriages anymore. They had a huge bonfire in the backyard.
Oh, my God, they burnt the carriages?
Oh, no, they didn't. Oh, and my God.
They burnt sets of harness and carriages, but the actual six Landor was actually sold at auction. And Sir John Miller, when I was there, tried to buy it back. Actually, I think it's in the Mossman collection. But so actually the Queen now only has five Ascot Landors. And they are used principally to take – we used to do the whole journey from Windsor Castle to Ascot Racecourse, which is probably 12 miles. Because it all took so long, what we do now is we take the carriages empty to Duke's Lane, actually, which is fairly near Ascot. That's where the Queen and her guests get out of their automobiles, get in the carriages, and the last mile and a half to 2 miles is actually with the principals on board. And we go through the Golden Gates at the end of Ascot Racecourse, and the racing people amongst you might be interested to know that we are told not to follow in each other's tracks. So if you look at a shot of the Ascot Landors going down the racetrack, because we don't want to rut especially if it's wet at all, we don't want to rut the racecourse. So we try to – the good postillion drivers will kind of just go – probably 2 or 3 foot to the left and the next one 2 or 3 foot to the right. So we're actually not in a straight line, which for the British to not be geometrically correct is kind of makes us crazy, but
sure, I can imagine.
we have to do it because, you know, we're geometrically challenged. Everything has to be
in its place.
Yeah, in place.
So that's the Ascot Landor, and as I say, I think I sent you a picture, and you could probably put it on your Facebook page. I did use an Ascot Landor once for the president of Indonesia when he came over, and I put a picture.
I did.
On my
I saw that.
Page.
By the way, you had the mustache going on back there, David.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, I was one of the youngest coachmen in the Royal Mews, so I wanted to look older. So I was tall enough, but I wasn't hairy enough. So.
Well, Brooke asked this. I was interested to hear David's commentary on the right wheeler and how wound up he was and the expert way he was handled. I would also love to know more about the postillion approach to driving. So basically what they had was a four in hand. They had four horses and they had a rider on each pair. So the rider controls the off horse too. How's all that work?
Okay. To use the terminology correct, the postillion is known as the postillion driver, even though he's riding. And the drive horse or the ride horse is always the near side horse, because obviously you get on the near side. The offside horse or the right horse is called the hand horse. So it's the ride horse and the hand horse, near side and offside. As I explained before, the history of the postillion, I think I don't need to go over that again. And what you have to understand is that, you know, there's new people there and there's a new Crown Equerry there and everyone has their own way of doing things. All I can tell you is the way we used to do things was that the thing that controls the hand horse is the side rein. And if you notice the side rein on all those horses, it's a rein that goes from the saddle pad to the horse's bit. And that really has to be adjusted so that when the horse... the hand horse, that is, the right horse, the offside horse, is trotting, the horse's head is turned slightly to the right.
I did notice that.
So when you want to turn to the right, you actually, the horse you're riding, that's easy to control because you can squeeze with your legs left and right and turn him. But you actually put your short whip on the left-hand side of the right horse's neck and push him over, but the side rein will actually keep his head actually, as you let the rein go, your hand rein, the side rein will come into play and actually pull him over to the right. One of the problems I think they had with that horse cantering was the side rein was really too loose. If you notice, both the hand horse's heads were, even when they were pulling up the hills, had their heads turned in. When we were preparing for any sort of postillion, we would go round and round the quadrangle at the Mews at Buckingham Palace or Windsor Castle, and we'd have coachmen, and as you were riding, you'd say, just shorten my side rein one, or just let my side rein out one, or just do up my girth, or something like that. And of course, horses can always be like horses, and that can always go on. But it's really sights and sounds, which is really what we did to train the horses. We would get into the indoor arena riding the horses and or driving the horses, and we would have other members of the Royal Mews in the middle of the riding school with bearskins on, with sabres, with trumpets, with drums, with flags waving, and we would desensitize them to a certain extent. I did read a report that the one of the outrider horses that was doing an awful lot of cantering was a young horse. But I find that hard to believe, because really you wouldn't put a young horse in that position.
I pitied that one. I know exactly which one you're talking about. I pitied that poor rider. He had his hands full that day.
And again, one of the things, when if you look at the pictures of the Royal Wedding with the Prince and Princess of Wales, the outrider horses all had standing martingales on. One of the things that the head coachman at the time, Arthur Scholl, was very keen on, coming from the King's Troop, but also safety, was to put a standing martingale on so that they couldn't get their heads up and down. And it's only for a short period of time, but the key to success in a ceremonial is make sure the horses are tired before you go off, because work for them. It's different if they're going 14 miles or 12 miles to Ascot. By the time they get to the Ascot racecourse, they're kind of settled in. But that was a short, sweet ride. And were there lots of people there? Yes, but as I say, we had 2 million people on the streets of London for the Prince and Princess of Wales's wedding, and we went a lot further.
So that leads to some other questions here, and I'll go right to Kayla's. How do they prepare the horses? You already talked about that, but you told me once too that you would actually do rehearsals in the middle of the night in London too when you needed to.
Yes, we would do at least one rehearsal, and if Sir John Miller wasn't happy with it, he would have a stopwatch, and if you weren't arriving at the portico or wherever you were supposed to be on the dot, he would come round afterwards and say, you were 30 seconds late. You were 10 seconds early. And of course, if you speak to anyone that treads the boards, anyone that's in show business, they'll tell you rehearsal, 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 practice, practice, practice. But I think the main reason why the horses were cantering was, and this may have been a security question, so it's not a criticism, but they seemed to me to go too fast. One of the things that Sir John Miller instilled in us was this slow ceremonial trot.
Yeah, well, I noticed, David, too, that even the cars, when they were in the cars, they were booking. So I wondered that too.
And it may have been a security, you know, what do we know? There may have been some security scare, and they may have been told, you know, get out of Dodge quick. But all I know is that Sir John Miller was very keen, and Her Majesty was very keen, that when we were doing these ceremonial things, it was about being seen. So you don't want to go by too fast. But the knock-on effects for going too fast, you probably saw a lot of the household cavalry that were following were having to gallop to keep up.
Yep.
because they were going too fast. And again, it's not a criticism, because they may well have been told, you know, don't
move
hang
on
around
down the road. Yeah.
Get out of there. But that would have cured practicing tighter side reins, going slower would have helped all the horses' behavior, in my opinion.
Now, okay, so Nikki asks, what breed are the horses that are at the Royal Mews that we saw?
Well, the ones that you saw are Irish draft crosses. They're bred by a guy, I think he's called Norman Brown, and they're sold to the Queen. The Queen, the royal household, have traditionally bought horses, or they were given horses as presents. Again, when Sir John Miller was there, we started this program of breeding horses.
You need to get a drink.
Yeah, one second.
Yeah, no problem. So now I got to ask you, Megan, when you saw that, did you think you could ride in that or would want to?
I definitely would have would rather have done open heart surgery on myself than ride in that.
and the other thing is, we kept saying as we were watching the whole thing was, they're riding a sitting trot for a long way.
Yeah, like, especially with all that armor and stuff on. I couldn't even imagine wanting to. I would definitely want to post that for sure.
Well, the House of Cavalry traditionally don't post. So all the horses being ridden by the men in cuirasses or the armor don't post, but everybody else does.
Are they using ice after? Is a lot of ice available?
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Why don't they post?
Well, because traditionally the cavalry, when they went into battle, they would be galloping. So they ride very long. And
I did notice that. Dressage length.
It's really hard to do it.
I noticed they ride dressage like their legs are almost straight. I mean,
exactly. And they're wearing buckskin breeches, which are, you know, made of deer hide. Very, very long boots. If you notice, the knee high boots, yeah. And of course they've got gauntlets on. They've got breastplates or cuirasses on. They've got a steel helmet with a plume on, and they're riding with one hand carrying their sword. Because the sword is drawn, because that was a traveling escort. When you, on a state occasion, we have a royal escort, which is actually more men. But any escort, the sabers are drawn, ready to fight off anyone that's trying to do any damage to anyone in the carriage. So it is very hard for them to post, so they don't post.
Interesting.
That is interesting. Jesse wants to know, what bits do they use?
For the Ascot, they were in an Ascot landau, so they used the Ascot harness, and they use Liverpool bits. If it's state harness, they use state bits, which are Sir John converted. We actually put they have what they call a boss, which is on the side of the bit, the cheek of the bit, which has the royal emblem on. So in the old days, they were really quite brutal bits, but we had a lot of Liverpool bits with bosses put on, so you actually couldn't see, but they actually had generally a Liverpool bit. And of course they had the Ascot harness, and they were in semi-state livery, not Ascot livery, because they weren't going to Ascot. And Ascot livery is a state livery, because normally the Queen's in the procession, but they had semi-state livery on, so they didn't have the fully gold embroidered and red jackets on.
And then the riders, what bits were they in? I didn't even notice.
The riders were in what they call frock coats. They were in full livery, scarlet livery, because they were outriders, and that is kind of normal for semi-state. It's only the carriage people that wear semi-state livery. It's really a hornet's nest or a spider's web of protocol, because you probably notice when the Duchess of Sussex, as she is now, before she was the Duchess of Sussex, she was Meghan Markle. So she went in the Royal Rolls Royce, but unlike the Queen and other members of the royal family, if you noticed, coming out of the roof was the royal standard.
Right.
Well, she couldn't have that because she was a commoner. It's kind of like the Princess of Wales. Before she became the Princess of Wales, the bride's procession had a traveling escort, and they had a non-state harness because she wasn't royal yet. But then coming back, she was royal, so she could have more state livery, as it were.
So now, one of the questions that came up, the cavalry, do they get to ride a lot or only ceremonial occasions? You know, how often are they on their horses?
Well, when you when you join the Blues and Roars or the Lifeguards, they're the household cavalry. They make up the household cavalry. And you can tell the difference. The Lifeguards have the white plumes, and the red plumes are the Blues and Royals. So when someone joins the household cavalry, they, for about 18 months, they have to learn to ride and do ceremonial work. And then after 18 months, they move on to driving a tank or an armored vehicle. So almost all the rehearsals that we used to do were, they were partly for us, but they were mostly for the household cavalry, because these guys would be there for a year and then never do it again. And every year you had new guys, new troopers, as it were. The NCOs, of course, Corporal of Horse and, colonels and majors, Sergeant Farrier, those sort of people were there all the time. But the actual troopers were only in for a short period of time.
David, you mentioned obviously Princess Diana's wedding and how you were part of that. What happened to those horses that were part of that? Is there a retirement ceremony when horses reach the age of where they're retired, or is there anything special that you guys do for horses that have served? Or
At Hampton Court Palace, there's a place called the Royal Paddocks, or the Hampton Court Stud. My father was the stud manager there. That's where almost all of the carriage horses go to be retired. And that's, which I touched on a little bit briefly earlier, there was a short period of time, they bred a lot of horses. Sir John Miller and my father were responsible for breeding these crossbred horses, which we actually drove in competition. The Queen had a wonderful stallion called Mulgrave Supreme, which was a Cleveland Bay stallion. And we had these Oldenburg mares that were given to the Queen, Eagle, Falcon, Kestrel. And we started this breed. Well, the Royal Mews started this breeding program. And of course, it was much nicer from everyone's point of view to know where they'd come from and what their breeding was. And of course, the Queen took great delight, Her Majesty took great delight in trying to recognize whenever I'd meet her driving at Sandringham or at Windsor or wherever, she would say, "Oh, which one's that? Oh, so that's Harrier, ma'am. Oh, yes, I remember her mother, and I remember when she was born, and I remember this, and blah blah blah." So it was really kind of nice. And there's, as I say, traditionally they've always been given or they've bought horses, but anyone that breeds their own horses, that does add another level of another dimension of joy to the whole thing. And there was a time, as I say, when Her Majesty's husband was driving horses that she'd bred, you know, with a home-built carriage in competition at World Championships. So, and those same horses obviously were used. And I posted a video of us on the royal wedding. In the second procession coming back, the Queen's procession, the second carriage I drove with two of the horses that he had in his team. And he particularly wanted that because it was kind of nice. Normally they're all grey horses up the front. So that was kind of unusual, but it was, and of course he came, if you watch the video, he said, "Well done," and petted the horses. And of course that's not normal either, but of course Prince Philip was the first rebel, as you know. So
that's true.
You've worked with him for like 20 years. You must have been happy to see him there after the hip operation and everything.
Yes, exactly.
He looked pretty good.
Yes, absolutely. He's one of those interesting people, because he's a man's man and he's a ladies' man. And I mean that in the nicest possible way, because even now at a cocktail party, you'll see him, you know, meet and greet around the room, and very much like the Queen, they add this aura of grandeur about everything. And of course, he's very interested and has done an awful lot. I mean, people don't realize, I mean, the Prince Philip Pony Cup Games, the Duke of Edinburgh's award scheme, the FBI would be nothing if he hadn't got it going and started driving. I mean, all these top drivers now, you know, Chester Weber and Boyd XL, they should really thank him very much, because he started the sport.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that basically CDEs were where you were involved in that, too. I mean, you were in the beginning of that.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, that all started there at Windsor, right?
Exactly. Oh, yes. I can remember Prince Philip saying to me, oh, I've got a letter from the driving committee. They wondered whether we could do a 30-meter one-handed circle. Of course, now they're doing 15-meter one-handed circles. But in them days, it was really quite a big deal. The sport was kind of and it's kind of easy to poo-poo the old days and say, well, you know, you didn't do it that, you know, you did this in them days. But we were kind of finding our feet. And
well, not only that, your carriages sucked for this particular.
Exactly. Yes. My first job before the marathon was to take a long piece of rope and tie half hitches from the splinter bar down the pole and tie on the leader bars because they were all made of wood because they were the first things to go.
They would break.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, basically you were using ceremonial carriages pretty much to go do cross country, you know, marathon.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they would break all the time, wouldn't they, back then?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Basically, if you finished the marathon, you were probably the winner.
I survived. You win.
There you go.
That's right. Well, David, it's always a pleasure. I could talk to you all day, and we really appreciate you coming on and taking the time to answer some questions that I know a lot of people had, and especially horse people, because we were all looking at the horses. So, and I do have to give a shout-out I hadn't forgotten. You mentioned Cleveland Bays, and we have a good friend who breeds Cleveland Bays here, and they're very endangered. I just read an article the other day that they're one of the ones that everybody's keeping an eye on, and it's good to see them still over there, still being used.
Exactly, and they were the original coach horses, the Yorkshire coach horse, because Cleveland is a part of Yorkshire, and the Yorkshire coach horse was really very closely related to the Cleveland Bay, and they were the original bay, completely bay, no white on them at all, black points, you know, black mane and tail and black legs, and were ideal for driving, had a nice level head and were easy to drive, and
Well, Michelle there, I put in the plug for Cleveland Bay, so I wanted to give that to Michelle, who's been listening to our show, I think, since the beginning. So, well, David, thank you so much. I know you have to get to the airport like we do today, and I would recommend building a boat, because I think it's the only way we're going to get there.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yes. Snorkel and flippers.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thanks, David. We really appreciate it. I miss talking to you. We have to have you back more often.
Okie doke. Bye.
Right. Take care, David. As David Saunders, who is coachman to Prince Philip for a long, long time and the Queen and the Royal Mews for 20 years. And as he said, he was being a little bit humble. They invented the sport of combined driving. And it was really invented right there at Windsor Castle. And it was Prince Philip who wanted a competition. And that's how it all started. And Prince Philip was really one of the people driving the whole FEI movement back then. And to get the FEI started, and a lot of people don't realize how much the Royals were involved in that. And David as well. So,
Definitely a lot of horse history in that family for sure.
I don't know about you, but I could have talked to him for another 2 hours because I just have endless questions.
Oh, easily. Easily. It could have been like, oh, and it's noon. Huh? Yes. Well, that's fun.
That's fun. We just missed our plane.
That's right.
I did have one other question I wanted to answer before we go here. And by the way, you're doing great. You need to come back
Sweet.
When we actually do a whole show, when we do a whole hour and a half. But we're definitely going to have you back.
Without David Saunders.
Now I sent you the equipment. You have to come back. So.
That's right.
Haley asked in the auditor room, so this may be silly, but I love learning about iconic horses from every discipline. It could be a fun topic to cover weekly on a segment, regardless of the forum. I love hearing about amazing horses of the past and their story. Well, I got to tell you, we already do that, Haley. So for those that don't know, over on the Stable Scoop Show, since January, we have been doing stories about horses in history. Now, we kind of do it in the Paul Harvey rest of the story way, where you don't get the punchline till the end, and they're professionally written. So we do one every episode of Stable Scoop. So if you want to go back and listen from about January on, and you're going to hear some amazing stories of some amazing horse people and horses. So we do that every week over on Stable Scoop. So check that out.
It is so good, by the way.
Do you like that segment?
I do. I do very much so.
Yeah. And do you figure most of them out?
Some of them, it honestly depends on the discipline. Cause sometimes there's disciplines that come on. I go, yeah, I got no idea who this is. And then there's other times like, well, maybe it is this guy, and usually pretty right. But yeah, no, it's a very good segment for sure. I do like the change up. Not that I didn't like Helena, but I do like the change up of how you're doing Stable Scoop now.
And we got to give credit to Biz and Gale. They're the ones writing those stories and you know, it took them cause they were writers, but they're not used to writing where the reveal is at the end.
Sure.
Where you have to tease it the whole time. So it did take them a little bit. We had to work a little bit on getting that down, but now they're getting the feel of it. It's easier for them to do that.
Definitely.
But I love reading them too. It's a lot of fun. And Jennifer proofs them for me. She listens to them first. And I can see she's over there trying to figure it out before the end too.
I can imagine.
I screw my face up all in a little weird shape trying to figure it out. Yeah.
She's got her Google tab open. What is this?
Yeah. No Googling. That's cheating. No Googling during the story.
And they're digging back. I mean, some go back to ancient times and some are from the 1800s.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, we've had a little bit of everything, which has been fun too. But Biz and Gail, they're doing a great
really,
job.
Really, really unexpected ones. Yeah. Some of them are like, wow, I did not see that coming.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or you
absolutely.
Think you know the story and you only know part of it. I mean, that's the other thing, which is kind of cool, too. So, well, we hope you enjoy that segment. Head on over to StableScoop.com, and you can find all of those or on our Horse Radio Network app. Megan, thank you so much for helping out today.
Thank you for having me come in. That's been awesome.
Now you have to go back to your real job, I hate to tell you. But
yeah, it's not going to be nearly as much
fun. You got to go back to ordering parts.
Scheduling parts. That'll be fun.
For
great.
Drones, yeah. Is it spreadsheets or huge database programs, by the way?
So unfortunately, we are, you know, we tend to say we're super ahead of the game, but we all do everything off of Excel. So it's nothing but spreadsheets and formulas that I work with all day. So
I always think that a company like that builds these million-dollar things would be using the super sophisticated stuff, and here you are using Excel.
So did I. So did I, Glenn.
I mean, you guys are using Excel the way it's supposed to be used with all the bells and whistles, but still, I mean, it's Excel.
Still, there's many other programs that you're like, this would probably be better. Nope, we're Excel. We're fine.
Yeah.
So,
it always shocks me when that happens. Well,
me too. Broke, don't fix it.
That's right.
Exactly.
And I have been asked, I think because you were on the show, we talked about the cruise, about next year. There will be a cruise. We just haven't figured out which one yet. We're still working on that. We're still working on the dates. It may be a little later in the year, like maybe May. We're trying to adjust it with everybody's schedule. Plus, also, we're taking a look at which cruises we can go on, trying to mix it up a little bit. So we'll let you know. We'll get back to you.
Yeah, it was fun. It was my first cruise, and I wasn't exactly sure what to expect. So it was definitely a good experience.
Did you think that going with a group on your first cruise was an advantage?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't have gone had it not been a group. I would not have felt comfortable at all whatsoever to go, even with just like myself and someone else. Definitely going with a group for sure. If at the very least it gave you people to hang out with, mm-hmm. where you're like, I don't know.
And I don't know about you, but we kept seeing the other members of the group all over the ship all day. I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You just went like, oh, hey, there they go. Okay. Hey, how you doing?
And eating dinner together every night was fun. I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
For sure. And some people mixed it up. We didn't. We you know, we were happy in our seats, so we stayed in our seats. But it was fun to get to definitely talk to different people throughout
the night.
Well,
you got to hear about, like, you guys went scuba diving. You did some cool stuff while you were there. And we got to hear the stories from the day, which was kind of cool.
For sure. For sure.
Well, we hope to see you on the next one. We'll let you know soon when that's going to be.
Great.
So next year. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. There'll be shows coming out, but not live. Keep that in mind. So there will be shows as we go along. The only day we're not doing one is like next Monday. But just watch your feed. You'll see them pop in, and hopefully Jemmy will get that all figured out. I'm sure she will. Take care, everybody. We're off to Alaska.